Hey everyone, this episode is brought to you by BunnySlippers.com. Going to be talking about Carmilla today, not Camilla, as I keep saying. Carmilla today, and we're going to be talking to, this is the first time having Brian on, but hope to have Brian on in the future, and
don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to Black Clock Audio Tales, People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos. Find us on social media. We're on Instagram, we're on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. And you know what? You can go to paypal.me/pgttcm and donate some money to help keep the lights on and keep the episodes coming. And you can also go to threadless.com. Go to pgttcm.threadless.com. Check out our cool shirts. We've got the Ratfink-inspired Sothagwa and Atlatnacha t-shirt right now. We've also got a couple of logo shirts for the TV show. I wish. For the podcast. That, I don't know, I like them. I wear one around. I think it's cool. We've got buttons, not on anything, but if you go to any event that I'm at, or if, you know, you live in Portland and you're like, hey, or if you send a self-addressed stamped envelope, I can send you some buttons, some stickers, whatnot. Anyway, message me if you want buttons and stickers, because, you know, self-addressed stamped envelope, that's when you send an envelope to someone inside of an envelope. But you make sure that there's postage on the envelope so that the person you're sending it to doesn't have to pay postage for you. And, you know, stuff with free stuff. All right, today we're going to be talking about Carmilla, as I said a moment ago. And here we go. Here we go. Talking about Carmilla. All right, well, here we are back with Black Clock Audio Tales talking about Camilla. As part of our August Durleth Arkham House August, one of the things that Arkham House produced was in hardback. They produced Camilla in America in the 1940s. So, and today we've got... tell people who you are there, Brian.
Thanks, DV. Yeah, my name is Brian Seropoulos. I'm a PhD in English literature. Victorian Gothic horror is kind of my area of expertise, and I'm currently teaching at CSU Stanislaus down in the Central Valley here in California. So I cannot wait to talk to you about Carmilla today.
All right. So when it comes to Carmilla, I know nothing. I've just started to edit it together. I haven't had a chance to really read it. You know, as I said before, all I really know is it's the other vampire story written by an Irishman.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly, yeah. So obviously Bram Stoker wrote Dracula in the 1890s, but a quarter century before that, another Irishman named Sheridan Le Fanu wrote a story called Carmilla. And Carmilla is one of those stories that not many people have a lot of direct experience with, but a lot of people are still semi-aware of it. The character of Carmilla has been adapted and appears in lots of things. For instance, some of the Castlevania stuff she appears in. But more than that, Carmilla is really influential on the vampire genre. And I think in a lot of ways, Carmilla is more important to modern vampire stories, I think, even than Dracula is, even though, again, far fewer people have read it or have heard it, as we've discussed.
All right.
Yeah, so where should we start? Should we start on Le Fanu himself?
Yeah, Who's this Joseph Le Fanu guy?
Yeah, so he is an Anglo-Irishman, right? So that means that his family was English, and there's some French in there too. The Anglo-Irish basically were put in charge of Ireland by the British, who had been ruling it for a while. And so they were foreigners living in a somewhat strange land where they were both in charge of things, but also kind of not loved by a lot of the populace, right? So kind of this stranger in a strange land sort of aspect. And some of that shows right up in Carmilla, right? So Carmilla is about an English family. Laura is the main character, her and her dad. Her dad was part of the Foreign Service, I believe, assigned by the British Empire to Austria. And so the story takes place shortly after her dad has retired. And so they are an English family living in a strange land of weird, backwards, rural people who have these strange superstitions about ghosts and vampires and spirits. And in a lot of ways, as I was mentioning, that story kind of comes out of Lefanu's own experience, right? In Ireland, among the Irish, you had a different religion, right? Lefanu was Protestant. Most of the Irish were Catholic. So that tension was there. So that was certainly a big part of the inspiration for the story, I think, for him. There are others. Lefanu, as a visitor long-term, him and his family in Ireland, did a lot of time collecting a lot of the Irish folktales. So he would write about, you know, banshees and these other local legends, which he was fascinated with. And so a little bit of the banshee myth makes it into Carmilla, even though it's a vampire story. Banshees haunted specific families. They would follow them around. Carmilla, as a vampire, appears to largely be haunting her descendants. Laura, her kind of lover, is also her victim, is also apparently a long, 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 long lost descendant of Carmilla herself. So a lot of these influences went into the story. Along with Lefanu's own readings just on the vampire myths in Romania. There had been a book written maybe a century earlier by a monk kind of about these. So he had read that too. So that's where the story kind of comes from. Obviously, it's most famous for its pretty overt kind of lesbian overtones, which maybe we should talk about next. One of the ways I think that Carmilla is more influential than Dracula to today's horror is that the vampire as a figure has always been kind of a queer sort of figure. And by that, I mean, you know, cuddling up to someone and drinking their blood seems to be a pretty overt kind of very intimate act, a kind of perverted act in many ways, right? And obviously that stuff's all in Dracula. But the idea that you would make a vampire that fed, a female vampire that fed on other women exclusively, it seems. Carmilla is mostly haunting Laura, who is the protagonist of the story, but at night, Carmilla also sneaks out and is killing the other local girls of the same age, right? She only feeds on attractive young girls of her own apparent age. Carmilla's 300 years old, whatever, right? The idea that that would be just part of the text seems very natural to us now, but I think was a lot more scandalous when it was written in the early 1870s, perhaps. Even Bram Stoker, who in many ways copied from Carmilla pretty tightly, didn't go that far, right? He has three vampire women feeding on Jonathan, right? And then one male vampire feeding on a couple different English women. Thoughts? That is probably what it's most well known for. And as far as the vampire's sexiness and queerness, I think one of the reasons the vampire myth itself has been so sought after, I think, is because of the kind of inherent, obvious kind of eroticism of the vampire, right?
Yeah.
We already talked about the intimacy of it's the way it feeds. Something about sex, which is both alluring but also somewhat dangerous, right? And the vampire, as has been noted many, many times, is a real good metaphorization of that, the dangerousness of sex, right? Mm-hmm. Not only vulnerable, but I may in fact be kind of consumed by this other person. And so that's always been part of the appeal. But what's interesting about Carmilla, again, is that a little bit of that sexiness is kind of in the context of a kind of a same-sex seduction slash romance slash whatever. I mean, the other part of the allure of the vampire is eroticism is that we have this weird question of consent going on, right? I mean, the vampire seduces its victim, but also in Dracula and other stories, often the seduction is itself kind of supernatural, right? So the vampire appear in through the window and like mesmerize their victim or whatever. And so that kind of questionable, perhaps lack of consent is both very, very disturbing and upsetting, but it's also disturbingly part of the appeal, I think, for a lot of readers to kind of indulge in that fantasy in kind of a safe space. What is interesting about Carmilla for me, I think, though, is that Le Fanu really does away with that. Carmilla's hold on Laura does not seem to be supernatural. Laura spends all of this time talking about how beautiful Carmilla is as soon as she's admitted to the house, how her caresses were like those of a lover, and Le Fanu keeps having to have his protagonist say, like those of a lover, because she recognizes that, you know, her lover can't be a male, can't be a female, right? Mm-hmm. It has to be a male. And so at one point, Laura talks about how she wondered if some beautiful young man has simply disguised himself as a woman in order to gain access to the house to pursue his suit of her, right? So she thinks about that for a minute. And so she goes through all of these kind of, you know, what we might call mental gymnastics to try and figure out what is going on. Though quite clearly she is very into what's going on, mm-hmm. and is not only Carmilla's victim, but really kind of actively pursues Carmilla as well, I think. I mean, when you have your narrator describe a character as being very beautiful, that's fine as a first kind of description, mm-hmm. right? But Laura is always saying that. She's the most beautiful girl I've ever seen. She was stunning, right? So the fact that she goes on rapturously about it so often makes it seem quite clear that that part of the relationship is consensual.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, as Carmilla starts drinking her blood and Laura starts dying, we have doubts, obviously. But at least at the beginning, the relationship seems to be a pretty even, more or less consensual relationship. And again, that's another way in which Carmilla, I think, even more than Dracula, is in some ways a lot more modern mm-hmm. vampire tale than Dracula even is at times. So,
Interesting.
Yeah, and so I don't know, where else can we go? I think Carmilla as a victim is a, as a, sorry, as a predator, as a vampire. She becomes a victim at the end because that's the way these stories tend to end. But
sure.
She's really a fascinating antagonist as well, I think. I've read this story a number of times, but when I was revisiting it yesterday, one of the things that really popped out to me is just how brilliant and clever Carmilla is at establishing herself in these households. She basically has this kind of modus operandi where she will present herself to another house in a way in which she is, as I was accidentally saying, kind of a victim. The way Carmilla appears to Laura's family is she has her drivers in this carriage stage this carriage accident right in front of them. And Carmilla's like flung around, and this woman who pretends to be Carmilla's mother obviously is one of her human, I don't know, followers or servants or thralls or something, you know, begs Laura and her father to take in her daughter because she has this errand she has to run to. And they bring Carmilla into the house, and she's dazed and seemingly near death. And what you find out as you read along is that she's been playing the same game for centuries. And the game is all about making herself seem like a kind of a victim, seeming very frail and in need of protection. And in that context, she keeps getting admitted to these the houses of these people who have, you know, late teenage age daughters that she can seduce and then eat and then go on to the next one. There's some really interesting kind of, you know, social and psychological manipulation that goes on. So one of the strange things about the story is that Laura tells us early on this kind of anecdote about how when she was six, she had this dream in which she was kind of attacked by a young adult woman or a teenage woman who bit into her breast, right? And this this happened when she was six. So when she's, I think, around 19, when the story takes place, And Carmilla gets introduced to the house. She realizes that Carmilla is the same woman from her dream from 13 years ago. And this would seem to be like one of those things that'd be like a big red flag, right? Where it's like, wait, don't I remember you literally biting into my breast 13 years ago? But no, the way Carmilla spins this whole thing out is just ingenious. She tells Laura that she remembers Laura from a dream she had when she was six. And Laura was, and like, the age she is now, right? So 19 or whatever. And that in their dream, they were just kind of cuddling up when Laura started screaming for no reason. And so Carmilla says to Laura, it sounds like you're scared of me based on your dream, but I think really I should be more scared of you. So she plays this move over and over again where she disarms people's fear and kind of, I mean, gaslights them is the term we probably use.
That's what I keep thinking.
Yeah, exactly. There's many moments like this. So one of the stories Carmilla tells the family, and this is to like, you know, she has to have a reason why no one goes in her room at night because she has to slink off to her tomb to sleep. Mm-hmm. Plus she needs to feed, right? So she tells this other story about how when she was a girl, her house was ransacked by thieves and they killed two of the servants. And so after that, she's been deathly afraid of that happening to her again. And so every night she has Laura search her room to make sure there's no one hiding under her bed. And she has her door firmly locked, right? So she's locked inside her room so that no thieves can get in. This is the story that she tells. But really, it's again so that she can slink off and sleep and go around eating people. The story presents Carmilla as this frail, weak, creature who needs to be protected, right? When really she's this alpha predator manipulating people and eating their daughters the entire time. And it's really clever, psychological kind of understanding on the point of Carmilla and, of course, on the author, Lefanu, that this works so well. At one point, the family realizes that she's not in her room in the middle of the night, but her door's still locked. And so they force the door and they find the room empty and Carmilla's gone. And you would think this would be a real problem for Carmilla and her plans. Like, how is she going to describe this? But she simply, after they stop looking for her, she sneaks back into her room, pretends that she's just woken up in front of her dresser. And they ask her about it, and she just plays dumb, like literally dumb. She's like, I don't know what happened. Your guess is as good as mine. And she lets Laura's dad, trying to be the smart guy, solve the mystery. And he says something like, Carmilla, when you were a child, were you ever found to be sleepwalking? And she says, oh, yes, when I was a child, but I haven't done it in a year. And then Laura's dad's like, aha, see, I've solved it. And she like smirks at him, letting him play the smart guy, when really she's allowing him to come up with an explanation that excuses her behavior. Meanwhile, she's still macking on and also slowly eating his daughter every night. So, there's more examples of this too. It's over and over again. Carmilla's mother figure also is the master at manipulating people and does this a number of times. So, a really great, scarily capable kind of antagonist, Carmilla is, I think, in many ways.
Nice. So, and no, this sounds like a modern, like a very, very, very modern story. Like I could imagine whoever, like the young actors of these day playing the vampire and the teen, and you know it's just like being set in modern times and like, oh hey, but yeah, no it seems like it could be made into a movie or a mini series for Netflix like the next, you know, tomorrow. And yeah, very modern.
Yeah, and there I have not watched this, so I can't absolutely vouch for it, but I hear it's very good. There's a recent web series called Carmilla, and it's set in the modern day, I believe, in a college dormitory, and the modern Laura's roommate has recently perished under questionable circumstances, and she gets a new dorm roommate named Carmilla, right? And so they tell this kind of a web series. I hear it's quite good. I've been meaning to check it out, but the premise sounds ingenious, and it's a nice clever spin on the way the story plays out, because Laura is looking forward to this visit from this friend of hers to come stay in her house, and her friend mysteriously dies. Right at that moment, they find out about it. Carmilla has this, you know, carriage accident. So it's a very clever reimagining of the core premise of Carmilla set in the modern day.
Oh, wow. Very cool. Very cool.
So you should, and I should check that out.
Yeah, definitely.
The other modern story it reminds me of a little bit is Let the Right One in some ways, which doesn't have the more explicitly kind of lesbian or queer aspect, but the vampire from that story is always presenting herself as someone who is frail, who is in need of protection. She's also kind of a protector to the young boy. Oscar, I think, is his name, right? Mm-hmm. So she protects him, but also she needs someone always to protect her. And that story is really about a story of grooming, in which this predator pretending to be a victim is just in the middle of grooming her new protector, basically. Her old protector dies in that story and is replaced by this kid, I think Oscar, who's going to be taking care of her, but is really basically her servant, right? Moving forward. And so that's a story that when I was rereading, it kind of reminded me of a very modern sort of take on the vampire.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, Brian, thank you so much for coming on to Black Clock Audio Tales and talking about Carmilla. Is there anything else that you wanted to leave us with before, or I can always edit that last part and move it to the next part. So in case there was anything else you wanted to talk about.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I would say obviously read Carmilla, but also I would suggest to your readers to read the collection it was published in. Lefanu's In a Glass Darkly is a really fantastic classic ghost story collection. Carmilla is a little out of place as a vampire story. There are mostly ghost stories in that collection, but it is really fantastic. And I think it also seems a lot more modern than its timing would indicate. Green Tea is one of my very favorite ghost stories, and you should check that out as well.
Nice. Sounds good. Definitely going to have to check that out. Yeah, I know. I know for a fact that Green Tea and Other Ghost Stories was something that Arkham House produced for American audience in the 1940s. Nice. So yeah,
great. Yeah, they're really, really
so. Good. Good. All right. Well, again, thank you so much, Brian, for coming on. We're gonna have to have you come on some other time in the future to talk about video games and Lovecraft and that kind of fun stuff.
Sounds great, DB. Thanks a lot.
All right. Yeah. Thank you so much. Thanks, everyone, for listening to the show, paying attention, listening to Brian and Drew talk about Carmilla, and yeah, thank you so much, and remember that we've got a monthly Call of Cthulhu audio show that we do for Black Clock Audio Tales called People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos. Gonna have Ken Height on talking about Rand T'Goth, and it's pretty cool. And also, end of the month, we're going to have David Heath talking about Ambrose Bierce. We're going to have Ken Height talking about Ambrose Bierce Penultimate. So yeah, get ready for that. And all right, thank you so much for listening, and we'll get you next. We'll talk to you next time. Keep it squiggly and stay weird. All right.